Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host of Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We are going to be having another guest on with us today, a wrongfully convicted, incarcerated individual, and his mother will be coming on most likely before he is able to call in. Lately, we've been talking a lot about wrongful convictions in this country. We have also been talking about an event that we're going to have in June of 2023, this year, for the entire month, making mass calls, letter writing, emailing to the media, to the governors in every state, to the legislative members about these issues that need to be resolved. Again, I'm going to repeat that in other countries, we are the only country in the entire world with mass incarceration, prisons being filled with wrongfully convicted individuals, with first-time offenders, with victims who are now or were incarcerated after the fact. When we speak of victims, we're not only talking about the victims in the communities. What we're talking about, victims behind the prison walls who later became offenders. Many of them mentally ill, many of them who have been violated as children, adolescents, or young and old adults. Many people incarcerated unnecessarily. We have a government that seems to think by executing people who have executed someone else that it's okay. Two wrongs don't make a right. We shouldn't have a government that's going to murder someone because they have killed someone. And this is what we see a lot of happening. So this event is coming up in June. I hope that all of you will join us in making these calls, whether you make only 5 calls a day, 3 calls a day. If you email, the addresses, the emails are all being distributed throughout Facebook. Hold on to these contact information so that you'll be ready when the time comes. We are all coming together regardless of gender, regardless of race, regardless of anything. Anyone that knows that this injustice should be stopped, it should not be tolerated, we need to now start looking at doing something about it. I'm going to introduce you now to Jason Lamar White's mother, Kimberly White, who will be talking about her son's situation as a wrongfully convicted individual. And I want everyone to listen closely, because this is not an isolated incident in this country. It's happening all too often. Kimberly, are you on the air with us?
Yes, Leona, I'm here.
Can you please introduce yourself to the audience and talk a little bit about what's been happening with Jason? And we will hopefully hear from Jason himself before the end of the show.
Yes, Leona, my name is Kimberly White, and I'm the mother of Jason Lamar White, who was a Tennessee inmate, and he is currently being housed in New Mexico on a nonviolent drug charge that he received 60 years at 100% for out of Tennessee. He is in his appeal process at the moment on the denial of his post-conviction relief. I'm waiting for him to call because I know he's looking forward to talking with you.
I know it's difficult. And Kimberly, I'm going to say one thing. I want the audience to know. No one really knows unless you have a loved one inside how difficult it is to even speak about these things. We, like everyone else, are normal citizens in this country who were, prior to our loved one's conviction and sentence, we were normal, and many of our loved ones were as well. Things happen. We all know that. We all know mistakes are made. So when it's time to speak up for a loved one, as Kimberly's trying to do, she's nervous. It bothers her, it hurts her, and many of you may have had friends or relatives yourselves that have been incarcerated at some point in time, because according to statistics in the United States of America, one in every seven individuals has been incarcerated or is incarcerated. So Kimberly, I'm going to let you continue to say what you're saying. Feel free to feel comfortable. We're listening, we understand, and there's no judging here. It's just a matter of feeling comfortable enough to talk about it, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so finish up what you were saying. I'm sorry. Can you hear me okay? Kimberly? Audience, if you can hear me, I would like to say, okay, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yesterday we had major problems because for some reason there's been issues since we've been discussing all of these things, and even that event coming up in June, there has been a problem with the sound coming at both ends, and we have reported it, and so we're just waiting to see what happens. But in the meantime, if you can't hear or if you have problems hearing me, even you, Kimberly, please let me know.
I will. I will do. This Jason's situation started in 2016 when he was serving time, finishing up a sentence he received as a youth. He was on maximum security, 200 miles from where the incident took place. He has a co-defendant, Christina Cole, who, because she would not lie for the state and point the finger at Jason, she was given 13.5 years at 100%, and Jason received 60 years at 100% on a package of methamphetamines that was shipped from a detective in Vistella, California, to the Bartlett Police Department, which is in Shelby County, Tennessee, Memphis. The package was planted on Christina's porch by one of the detectives, and upon her taking the package into her residence, the police came in, searched her home. The package was sitting at the front door unopened. She was arrested, and we've been fighting this case since 2016. Jason's attorney that we hired, Claiborne Ferguson, worked with the state to help get this conviction. And the state even advised Christina that if she would turn against Jason, point her finger at him and say he had the package sent, then they would dismiss the charges against her, which she refused to lie, and she is in prison now serving a 13.5-year sentence at 100% because she would not help herself by helping the state, as they put it. Christina did go up for parole. She was just granted parole due to a change in the drug-free zone law in Tennessee. She has been granted parole, but she is not home yet. She has not gotten out yet. Jason has diligently been fighting this. He actually fired his attorney after trial and proceeded pro se because it was, you know, clear that the lawyers were not working in their best interest, but they were working with the courts, with the state, to get this conviction. It's been a long journey. It's been a roller coaster up and down. They actually moved Jason to New Mexico in May of 2018 with no reasons to move him to New Mexico. And he just recently had his post-conviction hearing in July of 2022. It was 3 days. He was finally brought back. He is pro se and continued to pro se. And the Judge Carter, Judge Robert Carter, who was the presiding judge, denied, you know, his post-conviction. So Jason is in the appeal process at the present time, appealing the denial of the post-conviction hearing. Jason did file a motion to recuse the appellate court judges in Jackson, Tennessee, due to them being biased and prejudiced and not looking at what, or holding that judge accountable for him, his disregard to the law, to constitutional rights. And so it seems that everyone in this is turning a blind eye to the injustice. So it's just been a uphill, you know, battle with it. We've had 48 articles published on this case. Jason has done, the articles were published by Sharon Rhonda with a posted email out of Connecticut. Jason has done a couple of interviews, radio interviews with David Tullis out of Chattanooga, Nuga Radio, 97.2. And I have personally done a couple interviews with David Tullis. And so there's been, we've tried our best to reach out to the media. We've reached out to many people. We did get his clemency filed with Governor Bill Lee out of Tennessee on the change in the drug-free zone that reduces the enhancement from 100% and not being eligible for parole, but to be eligible for parole. So he did get that submitted back in, I think, late January. And he's also sent in an application to a new wrongful conviction review unit that was formed in August of last year by Steve Mulroy, who is the new district attorney in Shelby County. So Jason has submitted an application for them to review his case there. And Jason just recently, within the past few months, was given access to the library there in the New Mexico prison where he's being housed, to where he could personally type up his own briefs. And he was able to submit them himself, because I've been helping him, having to help him the past 5 years that we've been fighting this. We truly believe that he was shipped to New Mexico due to him trying to expose what's going on in this case. So I'm hoping that he'll get to call in and talk, because I know he has a lot more that he would like to say. Is there anything you want to ask me, Leona? Or
yes, I would. I'd like, first of all, how long has Jason been in now, incarcerated now?
Jason went in at the age of 18. He accepted a plea agreement on a previous charge from 1999, and he was about 6 months shy of completing his 21-year sentence, flattening his 21-year sentence, when they hit him with this new charge that's given him a life sentence, basically, on this nonviolent drug charge.
Okay. Now, you do know that we're going to be having this event in June to do away with life and life without, as well as the death penalty. And a lot of people may not understand, you know, how we can do both. But the reason we're doing this is because we are the only country in the world with mass incarceration. And all other countries around the world, the maximum sentence is 25 years, unless it's serial killers, mass murders, or terrorism. So for those who have not gotten life in life without, they're really serving a life in life without when they get sentences such as the sentence that your son Jason received. And these are some of the things that go on. I want to, I'm going to, okay, Dorothy D'Agostino was on the line, on the radio show with us. And Dorothy, if you have any questions for Kimberly, please feel free to ask her.
I didn't hear the same, the talk, and I'm sorry. I've been in excruciating pain, and I just got in. They gave him a second sentence?
Well, what happened with Jason is Jason, first of all, he's currently in New
Where's
Mexico.
Where's he located?
Excuse me, Liana, Jason is on the line with us now.
Oh, okay. Please bring him along with us.
Jason, Justin, are you there?
Justin, can you hear us? Somebody has a TV or something going on in the background. Can you please shut it off?
Hi, Son, can you hear us? Jason.
You know, I noticed this is happening a lot as well. When people call, prisoners call, they can be talking 1 minute, you can hear them, and all of a sudden the number's still there, but you're not able to hear them. This has to be an issue that's occurring in the prisons itself, because it's happening all too much.
Leona, their phones are recorded, and they can shut them off if they want to.
Well, I know that, Dorothy. We've been doing this too long to know any difference, but this is happening a lot. People are talking on the phone with their loved ones, and then all of a sudden everything gets quieted down. You don't hear anything at the other end. We're paying for phone calls that are being intercepted or being – I don't know what's going on. Okay.
Excuse me, Leona. He's on with us now.
Jason, can you hear us? Okay. Yes, Jason, can you hear us? Okay. Good.
Yes,
how are you?
Okay. How y'all doing?
We're doing okay. I'd like to have you speak. I know that you only have a few minutes here and there, but if you can tell the audience a little bit about what's going on, and also some kind of follow up from the last time you were on the show, to let us all know what's happening with your case.
Yes, ma'am. Like I said, I do appreciate you allowing me this opportunity, and as far as you know, the progress and what's going on is, I think recently the governor has gave Christina clemency or some type of thing to where she can go for parole, and I think they granted her parole at the parole board. We're hoping in a couple of weeks that the people will approve her to be released. She's been already done this 6 years on this illegal conviction. But give some of the people an update of the situation is that me and her was put in a situation, and that we were illegally convicted on a drug case that initially initiated from California with a FedEx package that was taken into FedEx in California to be shipped from a person in California. But the police officer in California seized the package from FedEx and then put it in a UPS package and reshipped it from one police in California to the police in Memphis, Tennessee. And once the police in Memphis, Tennessee received the package, he then took it to the address that was not listed on the FedEx package itself, but to a different address, which was Christina Cole's residence. Placed it on her front porch, knocked on the door, and walked away. She set it inside the house, no further than the front door, never opening the package. The police said that he executed the search warrant at 3:40, and that once he got into the residence, that he said that she was tracking the package, and that she sent 3 text messages in reference to the package being delivered. They indicted me and her, and I've been in prison for 24 years. I was in prison at the time of this incident. They indicted me and her together as co-defendants, and which another person did come forward and give a full confession saying that he lied to her and that he was intending to send her jury for his mother, and that she was just being a victim of the circumstances to receive a package that she didn't know the contents of the package. But I was able to later determine that by her booking sheet or her arrest ticket that she was arrested at 3:30. The text message that was sent was sent at 3:38, 3:39. And how was it possible that he executed the search warrant at 3:40 if she was already in custody at 3:30? And even with the tracking of the package, the fact that they never retrieved any computer from her residence but showed a picture of a computer screen of her tracking a FedEx package, but the package was never sent from California to Memphis through FedEx. It was sent through UPS. Which if she was anticipating the package and tracking the package as they said she was, then they would have known that she would have known that the package was never sent from California. So there was no crime in Tennessee. And because they found pictures and letters of me at the residence, I became their primary target. So I was able to find transcripts where a judge and DA had a full-blown conversation about me, allegedly about my gang affiliation and about me being in prison and my past criminal record. And I wasn't even on this judge's docket. During arraignment, the DA said, can we address State versus Jason White? And the judge said, well, he's not on my docket. I'd be glad to hear you. The DA had to remind the judge of this May 16th of 2016 conversation about me in order to refresh the judge's memory about their little discussion of my gang affiliation and things. So I've been trying to fight this myself pro se, and because no lawyer in Tennessee is willing to stand up against the judicial process and protect my interest. Even when my lawyer brought this other person in who gave a confession to having this or attempting to have this package sent to Ms. Cole's residence, that he became a co-defendant. And during trial, the DA was allowed to use this out-of-court statement pretty much to call him a liar and reference to us having anything to do with this package. And me and this other individual was never at the same location. He was also in prison. He was at a separate prison. So I did have a post-conviction, and I tried to subpoena the judge that was involved in my case and also filed a motion to recuse him. But he denied my motion to recuse, and he also denied me the right to put him on the stand in reference to the transcripts that I found between him and the DA. Even when I tried to attempt to ask the attorney about the transcripts, the judge interjected and said that that was hearsay, that I couldn't talk to him or I couldn't question him about these transcripts. And I told the judge then, that's why I subpoenaed you. And he said, yeah, and I squashed your subpoenas. So the Tennessee Department of Correction, with the assistance of the District Attorney's Office, they have agreed to have me sent to New Mexico. And New Mexico does not provide me any type of Tennessee law. And I've been doing everything I can to maneuver through the situation that I've been placed in to fight against what these people are doing against me. And so Christina, like I said, she was a 40-something-year-old mother, a mother of three that's never been in trouble. She's not a street person. Even if you show her drugs, she probably wouldn't know what they were. But yet here she's being convicted for a crime that she did not know nothing about. Was she naive to the point to allow someone to send her a package to her house? Maybe so. But some people good-hearted like that tend to think that they're helping someone, and the person that you're tending to try to help is doing you wrong. But that's not your fault. She shouldn't have done this 6 years in prison for something that she knew nothing about. And how is she in a conspiracy when they found all these cell phones in her house, old cell phones, new cell phones, three different cell phones, but none of them ever talked about anything illegal? And because they found pictures of me at her residence and letters that I had wrote her prior to to what had transpired that had nothing to do with anything other than that we was in a relationship at the time, they became the target me. They even tried to convince Christina to lie on the stand on me, and Christina refused to do that. She said she wasn't going to lie on the stand to help them convict me when I had nothing to do with the package being sent to her house in the first place. The thing right now is trying to prove or get someone to, that's willing to listen about how the judicial process is against us and how the Constitution doesn't protect the citizens but yet protect the politicians. Because my rights has been disregarded throughout this whole proceedings, because a judge and DA cannot conspire against you or have an expertise hearing without you having being present or out without you having an assistant counsel. And that's what they done. I became a target to these people. And these people gave me 60 years, in which I now die in prison because of the fact that these people will not take responsibility for what they've done. And they're doing everything they can in the state of Tennessee to keep me from trying to establish or prove that my conviction is based illegal. I've even raised these to the higher court judges in the state of Tennessee, and they've turned a blind eye to the fact that I have certain rights. If Tennessee inmates have a statutory right by Tennessee law to have the assistant counsel in post-conviction, then why wasn't I treated the same way by having the right as a pro se litigant to be present or to be brought back to Tennessee during my proceedings? And they try to convince me to take this attorney that's being appointed by the same judge that I have documentary evidence against to show that they conspired against me. The lawyers are being intimidated not to represent you. And most paid attorneys, not only are they paid attorneys, but they also have a business. Their law firm is their business. And if they don't pay their rent, if they don't pay their utilities, then they'll lose their business. And a lot of paid attorneys get pro bono cases. And they rely on these judges to appoint their cases to them. And that's what happened in my situation. My mama hired $10,000 for a lawyer, and this man pretty much worked against me. Ma'am, go ahead.
No, I just want to say, first of all, you're not gonna die in prison. We have a higher power, higher than any government official in the United States of America. So you're not gonna die in prison. And I'm glad you're bringing all these things up, because these are things that are happening not only in New Mexico or Tennessee, it's happening all over the country. And I'm glad you're bringing these issues up, because we need to do something about it. I don't know if your mom told you what we're planning on doing in June as far as the calls, the letter writing, and the emails, but we're going to hit the media. We are definitely going to get attention to all of these injustices going on in this country. And I'm going to let you finish talking, because you have limited time, so please continue.
Thing, Leon, is that, you know, now it's coming to a point where officers are being held to their responsibilities. Now, some of them might still be getting away with what they're doing as far as killing these people in the streets, you know, but some are starting to be held accountable, you know, and I believe that the judges and DAs should be held to the same standard and be held accountable when they're taking away people's lives illegally.
Exactly.
Or putting people on death row illegally. There's nothing that you can do. Even the people I've seen on death row stories where they overturned their case with DNA and they couldn't even sue the DA's office, or they couldn't sue nobody because they couldn't show a pattern of prosecution misconduct. These people have a blanket over them where they don't have to answer to nobody. And they feel like they're God and they can do what they want to with people's lives. And that's not fair to people. And they should not be protected if they know they're illegally convicted people or playing games with people's lives. They should be held to the same standard as anyone else. And that's what I'm fighting for, is that these people are starting to be investigated. In Tennessee, they have the Code of Judicial Conduct, where you can write to a board on the judges. But these same judges are all campaigning with each other. They're all going to look out for each other's interests. Now, the officer in my case, the detective, that planted evidence in Christina Cole's cell phone that was proven during trial, he's no longer a detective. He now works for FedEx. The judge in my case is now retired. But my thing is, if the officer didn't do anything wrong by planting the evidence, then why is he no longer a police officer? I tried to re-subpoena him in my post-conviction. On the subpoena, it said not to be found. But in the base of the subpoena, it says a white female answered the door, refused to open the door, and stated that the Mark guy was an ex-police department and don't want nothing else to do with this, that he works for FedEx now. So they chose not to subpoena him because of his own request that he don't want nothing to do with this. And I felt like I have a right to put on my proof to show that this man lied. Because how did you receive a FedEx package when I had documentary proof that you received a UPS package? How was Christina Cole sending text messages in reference to the package being delivered at 3:38 and 3:39 when she was already in custody at 3:30? These are documents that my lawyer should have used to impeach this detective's testimony. And because the judges know that they cannot control me as he can control other attorneys, that they didn't want him in the courtroom. They didn't let me put the DA on the stand to question him about these transcripts that I found. And if this judge and DA has conspired against me, and if this DA was able to bring me before him without me being randomly selected to his courtroom, how many other people in the state of Tennessee has been done the same way? And I don't think that if it wasn't for my own determination and the blessing of my mother, has been assisting me in, during this proceedings to find the information that I had found, we wouldn't even have the proof that we do have. And that's the thing that I challenge anyone to step forward and say that I'm lying when I have all the documents to prove what I'm saying. I wrote the judge up to this board in Tennessee. And guess what? They tell me I don't have no proof, but I have the transcripts. What is that? That's proof. And if the judge is refusing to get up here and testify to this fact, then I won't never be able to put on my proof. But that's the problem, is that once you're convicted, these people are doing everything they can to cover up their actions. And then they all play a part together to make sure you get convicted. Because I had no knowledge of any drug being sent to Ms. Cole's residence. Ms. Cole will tell you this. And the person that came forward and confessed said the very same thing in post-conviction. Now, I didn't know nothing about this. But here I am doing 60 years, and it'll take me another 20 years to try to overturn this stuff. And I'm already 42 years old. I'll be 62 years old before I get out of prison because of the way the judicial process works against you and the time that it takes for you to overturn something. And that's why I say that I die before I get out, because it takes you years to get yourself all the way up to the right courts to finally hear this stuff. And Ms. Leona, it's taken everything out of me due to the fact that I did graduate with a special ed high school diploma. I'm just grateful that I took the time in prison to further educate myself to be able to do what I'm doing for myself, because I realized there's three aspects of man, body, mind, and spirit. And if you don't sharpen all aspects of life, then you're failing what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, you know, I want to say we are proud of you, Jason. We are proud of you. And people in the media,
you have 1 minute left.
People in society, they have to understand that every case is different, every situation is different, and they need to hear more from you, Jason, because there was a woman in New York years and years ago that ended up serving 16 or 17 years in prison because she was carrying a package that she did not know contained drugs either, that someone had asked her to deliver. But what you're going through right now shouldn't be, and we're going to fight like hell to end all of this injustice that's going on in the prisons with you and all others that don't need to be in prison. But if you can call back, right, that'll be good. If not, we will have you on again, whichever way you can do
this.
Right.
I can call right back, ma'am.
Okay, hon.
I'll put the call right back. Okay.
The caller has hung up.
And Kimberly, I want to thank you. And you know what your son said is true. If it had not been for you doing all this, there's a lot of people incarcerated who have loved ones that are struggling, especially the mothers who are struggling to get justice for their loved ones incarcerated. And people don't understand what it's a strain, it's a struggle. And he's calling back now.
Yes, ma'am. It is a struggle, Leona. I'm 64 now. And, of course, it's, like he said, it's draining me as well. But you can't give up, you know.
No.
You've got to continue to fight. It's sad.
You know what's sad, too, is that there's 2.3 million incarcerated in the United States. There's so many people on Facebook, mothers, who are complaining about what's going on with their loved ones being incarcerated. Yet a lot of these mothers are just complaining. They're not getting involved, and it's not as though they have to leave their home to get involved. As what we're going to be doing in June does not involve leaving your home. It involves making phone calls, letter writing, and emails. We are getting the information out there to everybody on Facebook. We're getting the information, the contact information. We're letting everybody know 2 months in advance. So when the time comes, they just need to make those calls, send those letters, emails, whatever. They can do as much as they want or as little as they want, but do something. We need to stop this injustice going on in the United States prisons. There's too many people.
And Jason is on with us, but there's been discrepancy in the charges that he's been taken to. It's been changed over the years. But Jason, are you with us? Hello.
See, these are the things that happened. And you know what? It seems like when somebody's doing right, that's when you get all these distractions and interruptions. But these are the things that are happening. And the prosecutors, there's advocates around the country. I want to add this too. A lot of people don't know it. But there are a lot of advocates around the country and legislative members. We need to continue to stay in touch with our legislative members who are working on criminal justice reform, because a lot of them now are trying to, even with the board of pardons and also the parole board and also the courts, the judges, the district attorneys, the prosecutors, there's a lot of people that are working towards reform and getting rid of a lot of these people who are not doing what they should be doing. People that are biased, people that are wanting the worst for the incarcerated. When they talk about not being remorseful, again, they don't know what remorse really is because of the various cultures throughout the world. Men are taught not to cry. Men are not going to cry just so the parole board is going to see them crying and showing remorse. Men are not going to cry. Even if they're hurting, they're going to hold it in. That's a known fact. We have a government that's so ignorant. They don't try to understand people. They don't try to understand the cultural benefits that we have in this country. They don't try to understand the way people respond to certain things. They don't understand. And we have to educate, believe it or not, we have to educate our own government to a lot of these factors. And if they don't want to accept the fact that no one should be stereotyping prisoners, but they should be looking at each individual case.
I'm sorry, Jason, are you on here?
Yeah, I'm on here.
Okay.
Hey, it's Leon. I'm glad that you said that, because right now the people of Memphis was able to reelect Steve Mulroy, or not reelect, but elect Steve Mulroy as the district attorney's office in Memphis. And he's now trying to clean up the DA's office in Shelby County. The DA that was involved in my case, I know he's been either fired or he got out of office. The DA, the district attorney, the head district attorney general over before Steve Mulroy, she was so corrupt for the last 10 years. They've been hand selecting the board person over the grand jury to get illegal indictments for the last 10 years. So they are good. You know, I believe that there are good people within the DA's office, or there's good people out there that do care about how people are treated, you know, and I don't think that all people are bad people, but I think that sometimes that the good people are intimidated to stand up against the bad people. Because
you're
the
correct.
Bad people will do anything. The bad people
you're
will
correct.
Do anything to, and it's hard to stand on what's right. You know, it's easier in life just to go along with everything than it is to stand down and say, oh, this is not right. This is wrong. Now, Steve Mulroy did start a conviction review unit. Now, I sent in all my documents and everything to them in hope that they will see the reality of the situation. Because, I mean, a few years ago, I tried to hire this lady, she's a lawyer, to represent my case. Once she read all my documents, she said, this is the only case that you read about. You don't come across. You know, and I mean, she said that Shelby County would do everything they can to cover this case up. She pretty much told me that I would be better off representing myself because she felt like no attorney would touch my case because of the backlash that they would get in trying to defend me. Because of the stigma that these people are putting on me as being some dangerous person. And that I deserve to be in prison for the rest of my life. I've been in prison since I was 18 for an unrelated situation. Go ahead, ma'am.
I was just going to say, that's what you call targeting. There are people in prison who have been targeted by prison officials, by the district attorney. They will target certain people to make them look like the worst so that they can turn everyone against you.
Yes, ma'am. And see, that's why they sent me out of state under the pretenses that I'm a high-ranking gang member and that I have death threats towards these people. I have no death threats towards anyone. If anything, I'm trying to prove that I'm innocent and that I'm deserving of my freedom because I want a second chance. You know, like I said, I've been in here since I was 18. I didn't understand the value of life until after being in here for so long. That's like one of the guys, I asked him, I showed him a bottle of water, and I asked him, what is this? They say water. To me, my concept of that bottle of water is life because your body cannot function without that bottle of water. So my concept, the way that I've learned to have to learn to look at things differently, if I wasn't willing to change in here, then I would never make it in the free world. But I want a second chance at life. I want to get out there as the man that I've become to be better for myself and to be able to make my family proud of me because I made such poor choices in my life that made me a failure, that put me in here at a young age. But I don't regret them, but I was guilty for what I did back then. But what I'm doing time for now, I'm not guilty. I think every person, if you're guilty of something, stand up and be a man and do your time for it. Or woman, whatever it might be. But if you're innocent, then you should not be put in these situations where these people can just do what they want to you. And that's the reality. That's the realization that I'm having to face right now is to what extent that these people will go to try to make sure that they keep me confined to this institution.
First of all,
these judges in Tennessee.
First of all, I think the media needs to go in, and this is why we need to focus on bombarding the media. And also these large corporations making money off of the mass incarceration. We need to start giving them all kinds of poor, bad reviews, because if they start getting so many bad reviews, maybe they'll start getting more involved in trying to help prisoners instead of benefiting off prisoners. But I wanted to say, you mentioned they moved you out of state, alleging that there was a death threat made on you. I want to say something. There was another prisoner years ago that was also sent out of state alleging that there was a death threat made on this individual who had no enemies, who had never been involved with the law or anything. And then after being transferred out of state, they had his trial appeal without him even being present. So they have a motive behind their sending people out of state because of death threats.
Yes, ma'am.
The death threats are not happening.
Look, it wasn't, they didn't say that I had death threats on me. They say I have death threats on the DA and the lawyer that
okay.
was involved in my case. So it wasn't they saying death threats on me in particular. They're saying I have death threats towards them, and because of my high-ranking position, that I have the means to bring harm to these people. But if that was true, it don't matter where they put me. They could put me in China. If that was the facts, then I could still have the same thing done to them. If what they're saying is truthful. But it's not truthful, because I've never even talked to the DA, much less try to threaten a man. I had no ill will toward none of these people. I just want my life back. These people to take responsibility for what they did, not just for me, but for Christina. She has for 6 years not been able to see her kids grow up. That's not fair to her. This is an educated black woman that never has been in trouble, and here she is being sentenced to prison for 6 years, and no one cares.
Mm-mm.
No one cares to look into the facts. And like I say, you know, I'm not just bringing allegations against these people to try to justify anything. I have every piece of document to back up everything that I'm saying, to prove what I'm saying. But how can you prove something that the very people that convicted you or played a part in your conviction is looking out for each other? Because they are the same culture. They work together. They grew up together pretty much in the judicial process. My lawyer in my case was a lawyer for 20-some years. The DA was 30 years. I mean, the judge was 30 years. I think the DA for 15 years. But all of them are looking out for each other. So they say, I scratch your back if you scratch my back. And
that's
then,
it.
Like I said, how can you prove anything? It's against you. And if it wasn't for me going in there and trying to at least put as much as I did on the record, then they still didn't want me to put on no witnesses. And then, like I said, the judge, he's being protected by other judges in Memphis. There's a judge named Chris Kraft. He's in Memphis. He's like the head judge. But he's got so much influence in the state of Tennessee with other judges, these people are going to look out for each other. They're going to watch out for each other. And who can you complain to? Who can you take your proof to and show, hey, this judge needs to be investigated? Hey, I got proof of this. You can't really take it to nobody. Because
mm-hmm.
judges do what they want to and get away with it. If anything, they're going to force them into retirement because they don't want a can of worms open to prove that this man has been corrupt for the last 20-something years.
I believe if the media was more involved in reporting all sides to every story, I don't believe judges would be getting away with as much, or prosecutors. We have a media that reports one-sided stories all the time, and that's why we have mass incarceration. You know, as I say all the time, we interview people from other countries that talks about their countries in comparison to this mass incarceration in the U.S. They talk about the way they treat their prisoners in other countries compared to the inhumane treatment and conditions in our American prisons. So we need to hit the media. We need to hit the media. They need to go into the prison. They need to hear people talk like you. They need to hear your stories so they can report all sides, not just one side. That turns everyone against and makes stereotypical views of people incarcerated.
Yes, ma'am. And see, I completely agree with you. We've tried everything we could to get news or any Tennessee news involved in this. If it wasn't what's the lady's name?
Sharon Ronda.
She's from Connecticut. She's been such a blessing that she's been reporting and filing. She's a freelance journalist, and she's been one of reporting on all this. Now, if you Google the detective name in my case about planting evidence, his name pops up because we have proof. He even admitted on trial that he planted evidence against us. But because the judge was involved in the case, he turned a blind eye to the stuff. But if it wasn't for her and everything, her effort that she's put in, and she's been doing it for free, but we can't get no news in Tennessee to report on the facts. Even though my mama's been willing to bring these documents to prove them, they won't report on it. we have you like yourself. You're in another state. You had the blessing to allow me to get on here and allow my voice to be heard. But the people that really need to hear it is people. This is the people in Tennessee. I mean, yeah, everybody needs to know because, like you said, this is not just going on in Tennessee, New Mexico. This is going on all around the country. And this is what's so big going on.
Tennessee seems to be getting a lot of attention for the negativity that's going on in Tennessee. And Tennessee is a very ignorant state out of all the states as well, because Tennessee is mostly about biases. And that's something that needs to be investigated. Tennessee legislative members, corruption, everything going on in Tennessee needs to be looked at. Even though every state is just as bad when it comes to this injustices going on, they need to look at Tennessee and look at what's going on. I wanted to say, though, there are universities, law school students and their professors go over the documents of your trial and other things to see where they can find errors. So that might be something you might want to check out. It doesn't have to be in your state. It can be universities across the country that do this kind of work. But there's a lot of cases that are actually trials that are transcripts that are actually being looked at for flaws.
Yes, ma'am.
And I want to say one thing real quick. If you remember the case of, and this is in Massachusetts, Whitey Bulger. Okay, look what they did with him. They brought in people from prison, giving these people in prison a chance to get out of prison by testifying against Whitey Bulger. Whitey Bulger, what he did, I mean, he was guilty of what he did, but at the same time, the people they used against him were also guilty of crimes. But this is how the prosecution and the courts work. If they want someone bad enough, they will let other people free just to get that person. And this happens around the country.
Without no doubt, man. Just like they said with John Gotti, they let Sammy the Bull go for 19 murders just to get John Gotti. So this man confessed to killing 19 people just to turn states against John Gotti, right? So, yes, they'll let who they want to let go and walk free when, you know, Sammy the Bull was just as much as guilty as John Gotti himself, right? You know, so they should have both been in prison, if anything in that nature, right?
And who is this person in Tennessee? Who is this person in Tennessee that the Tennessee governor is trying to pardon now? He was a serious killer. He's trying to get him a pardon, and this is in Tennessee. It came out recently. Yeah. I forget his name.
Bob, do you know?
No, I don't. I'm not sure.
He hasn't actually even served much time. He just got convicted. I'll have to check that out. I can't remember his name. But they're planning on letting. Well, the governor's trying to let him go. And this is a person that killed. You're an innocent prisoner, and you're having all these problems. Whereas people that they claim are serious killers in even where you are, well, where your mother is, or wherever. They're planning on releasing them. They're making all these swaps in Russia and other countries for the most violent to get free in exchange for, you know, it doesn't make sense. This country has a lot of education to obtain, and it's coming from people like it.
I know Tennessee is very prejudiced towards African Americans, you know, and I mean, that's one of the things that they painted me out to be, because I'm a Caucasian man that socialized or that's allegedly involved in a black gang. And I think that that had no relevance to the situation, period, or who I socialize with or who I communicate with. I think that had no relevance to anything pertaining to my situation at all, right? I mean, clearly, just like what just recently just was showing on the news where about the lawmakers, Justin, somebody, I think it was three of them, a white woman and two black guys.
Jones, Pearson, and Johnson.
The two black guys got voted out and the white girl stayed. You know, so.
You know, that's good, though. That drew national, and actually it drew international attention, which is something that we need to have more of, is this international attention. And this is why people in other countries right now are laughing at the biggest of the most powerful at one time country in the world. Now the United States is looked at as a joke.
You have 1 minute left.
But I was going to say real quickly before you go, I want to say, you know, Jason, there's a lot of young people out in the communities today that if these government officials, lawmakers, were to release people like you and others that are serving all this time behind bars, I think there wouldn't be so much crime going on in the communities. This is something they really need to look at, because it's people like you that are trying to keep in that are causing more problems on the outside, because these kids need to relate to somebody that has been there, done it, and is now out there.
To have good leadership. And that's what goes on in prison, Ms. Liana. We're the ones that help teach these younger guys that come in what it means, because we've lived their life. They haven't lived our life yet.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's something that I look forward to having the opportunity to do, if I can make it out, is to give people better understanding. Because I wasted so much of my life to something I thought was significant. But as I got older,
thank you
I
for using Securus. Goodbye.
You know, we all make mistakes, and this is what people don't understand. People have gotten away with a lot on the outside, and they can judge those on the inside. But what they don't realize is everybody makes mistakes, and you can't take that person because they made a mistake. You can't take that person and give them 50, 60, 70 years life without parole and death. You can't. You just can't do it. It doesn't make sense to anyone except the people doing it.
And one thing that you did touch base on was the fact that people are afraid to stand up or will not stand up. We have Jason and Christina's case is not the only one in Shelby County. There are numerous cases in Shelby County that are wrongful convictions, planted evidence in the crime, just things against the law, you know, and with the judges, the DAs, and what they're doing. And these people will not stand up and come together to fight this because the pattern is there.
Exactly.
The pattern is there, but they will not stand up, you know, and come out and fight it like that. And it's like I've always said, you know, the more strands on a rope, the stronger the rope.
Exactly.
And the more cases we have, the stronger it would be against, and the better their chances would be, you know, on there getting their convictions overturned. So that is a problem that we've run into. I've reached out. I've tried to get people to come together, and I don't know if it's because Jason is white. You know, I don't know.
Because we're getting people, even on the outside right now, that are really looking forward to this June event. And yesterday we had somebody from the nation on with us. And, you know, we're getting people of all races to come together. And this and religions and nationality, whatever, cultures, we're getting people to come together, which is something that has been impossible to do in the past, to come together to see justice. And even though that conflict may still be there for the month of June, they're going to at least be coming together for that. But right now, race or religion shouldn't matter, because the problems that we're facing right now is not between race and religion. It's about power. People in power and wealth that are out there trying to get more power and bring the average citizen and the lower class citizens to naught. And if they can bring everybody, put everybody down there to the ground, then they have control over the whole country and the world.
Yes.
Is what they're trying to do.
Yes, and it's a financial gain as well, and it's a new era of slavery, is exactly this mass incarceration.
Modern day slavery, exactly.
It is a new era of slavery, the government is, you know, they're profiting off these inmates in prison. And
you know,
so
judges are supposed to be neutral. You know, judges are not supposed to be biased. They're not supposed to take one side against another. They're supposed to be neutral. Now, coming up with the parole board, and this is something we've been discussing a lot, the parole board consists of a lot of people on the board that are either involved in government or law enforcement, or they themselves are trying to get people to stay in prison. They're pushing people in prison. So we need to look at the parole board in a different light. If they can contact us to be on jury duty, people in the communities to be on jury duty, then that's what they need to do with the parole board. They need to bring in regular people. They need to bring in psychologists, psychiatrists, substance abuse counselors, social workers. Those are the ones they need to call in to be a part of the parole board, because these people know what it's all about. They're experienced in dealing with these kind of issues that these incarcerated individuals may have had when they first, you know, went to prison. And they would know if somebody is reformed, they would have a more willingness to see these people free. And then once these people are free, we need to work with them on transitional housing, transitional jobs, something to help them to transition back into the community.
Yes, because so much changes while they're in prison, and when they come out, they're new to it. One other thing I wanted to mention about Christina's parole hearing that we found kind of odd, the district attorney that prosecuted this case sent a letter of recommendation to the Board of Parole recommending that Christina make parole. Now, if she was guilty of this charge, why would the DA be willing to say, hey, look, you know, I recommend her for parole?
Yeah.
When he made sure she was found guilty and got 13.5 years at 100%. He's calling back now. Do we have time to get him in?
Yeah, we have another half hour, so he can call in right now. Okay. That'll be a good time.
Okay. Let me get him in here. Oh, it hung up. He'll call right back. So, you know, that was something, you know, we didn't understand. What was the purpose of him putting her in prison and recommending her make parole, which we're glad she was granted parole. But at the
maybe
same
his
time,
conscience, maybe his conscience got to him. Maybe his conscience got to him, and he was trying to, maybe he couldn't sleep at night. Some people do. They get, I don't know, but what he did it to get her in was wrong, and now he realizes, and he's trying to, I don't know.
Yeah, but kind of strange. But he's in Knoxville County. He's in Knoxville, Tennessee now as a district attorney there. And so this whole thing is just a huge miscarriage of justice with all parties involved.
You know, the DA in Massachusetts, when there was a case going on, the DA was pretty much corrupt himself. But I didn't realize until after that it was around the campaign time. It was around elections. And he got promoted from the district attorney. He became a congressman. He's no longer a congressman now. He's retired or whatever. But sometimes they have a motive behind wanting to get their cases won, whether they have to lie, bring in false witnesses, do all these corrupt things. They will do anything, you know, to gain that power.
It's all about the conviction and the money.
Exactly.
He's calling now. Give me 1 second.
This is audio audience. I want you to know this is how the people incarcerated have to get their voices heard. If the media were to go in and listen to these people, give them a voice, then they would have no problem at all. But to have to keep calling, to have to keep doing all these things just to be heard is insane. It really is. And I hope you and the audience and everyone listening all over the country, I hope that you will get more involved in prison reform, because it's definitely needed. Give these individuals a voice. Go into the prisons, as Families Against Mandatory Minimums has been encouraging everybody. Call your legislative members and have them go into the prisons at least once or twice a year and meet with these incarcerated individuals. Give them a voice, please.
He's on, Leona.
Jason, welcome back. You want to finish talking about what you were saying before you got disconnected.
Hold on 1 second. Let me make sure. Hello?
These individuals are suppressed in so many different ways. You know, it's sad that they have to go through this. And someone was telling me recently that the beds they sleep on is only like 2 inches thick. People are, Miriam Jacobs, she is a psychosocial therapist. She just wrote a book, and the name of the book is Values. Let me just get it because you have to hear this.
Jason, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
The name of her book is Suspended Values in Concentration Camp in Prison. Her book is about the U.S. prisons being like concentration camps. Miriam Jacobs has been in the prisons in the United States. She is a psychosocial therapist and author of this book, and she also does volunteer work in the prison in the Netherlands. And she speaks how the treatment of prisoners in their countries are humane. They don't call them by numbers. They call them by their names. The guards in these countries, other than the United States of America, they talk to these individuals like they're human beings. So these are the things that other people in other countries are talking about. The U.S., the mass incarceration, inhumane treatment, conditions in the prisons. Even, Jason, I want you to speak on this too, the water. We have had water issues. Even in the prisons in Massachusetts, the water was brown. People had to go on strike. Advocates had to speak out about the water. Jason mentioned water as being life. God did not create dirty water, although water is life. So this is another issue that needs to be addressed in the United States prisons, and I'm asking everybody to even bring that up in the month of June. So Jason, go ahead, please, and finish what you were saying.
But ma'am, yes, ma'am, as far as how things are in the system, it was supposed to be to help rehabilitate people, to help us, you know, to become better when we're released. But it's not like that in here. It's not nothing like that in here. I mean, there's really no, if anything makes you create hate against your authorities or things of that nature, because the way that the officers think that they have such authority over you to talk to you and to pretty much abuse their authority over you. That even with the grievance, as far as filing grievances or even the write-ups that you try to appeal, these people don't do nothing but throw it away. They throw these things away. You have pretty much no rights, because even in here, they feel like we should apply to policy or apply to the rules, but they don't apply to them. And they're all looking out for each other, and they're being taught in academy to come in here and hate us and to pretty much look at us as if we're the enemies. And, I mean, even out here in New Mexico, the biggest thing about these guards is that they want to keep you confined to a pod. They don't want you out in the hallways trying to go to education. They don't want you to do things that's going to help progress you or to help bring rehabilitation to your progress. You know, they have at this institution I'm at now, since the state has taken over, they said there's no more RDAP, no more drug programs for the inmates. And that's something that's very big out here that they definitely need, is drug programs, because 80% of the population pretty much shoot dope. So, I mean, I think that's a big thing. But, I mean, people think that we live comfortable in here, and it's not like that. Matter of fact, last night I had my shirt off in the pod. The officer told me to put my shirt on. I went and put my shirt on because he asked me to. But then I went to try to address him because the pods are so hot. It's unbearable. It's hard to sleep at night. You know, when I tried to address him about this, he wanted to get all cocky and say that he's a man. Well, I'm a man too. You're asking me to do something, and I did what you asked me to do. But now I'm asking you to go and try to do something about this heat, about the air, about there's no circulation in this pond. But they don't care about that. They come and enforce things on us for the last 3 days or since Sunday. We were locked down for something that the pod didn't have nothing to do with.
Jason, I'd like to interrupt you just for a minute. When these things happen, and please let others know, when these things happen, try to get the name of the individual, the CEO or whoever. Try to get their names. Because if anything happens if anything happens to any incarcerated individual, and we have the names of the people, because right now we are in global warming, and they're doing a lot of talking, even with us. I got a note the other day from the property manager that they were sending around to everybody, because we're in extreme heat for the next couple of days, even in Massachusetts. And they're talking about it being so hot that people are going to need, if people need any help, if they need water, whatever the case may be. Prisons, they were talking about the prisons in Massachusetts and other areas where the heat is getting so bad and the air conditionings are not being put on or they're not working right in the penal system. So if you can, let everybody know, when you're denied, when you're asked to do something like that, get the name of the individual. Because if anything happens, we have their names.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I got a name, Sergeant. His name is Sergeant Chavez.
Chavez.
Chavez. Chavez.
Okay. Because if people go back and listen to our previous...
You can file grievances, excuse me, ma'am. You can file grievances, and it don't.
They don't respond.
They just don't respond.
So many incarcerated individuals talk about that. They file grievances, they're completely ignored, and then a lot of these lawyers, you try to contact these lawyers, and the lawyers are just as bad. They say they can't do anything, like they're afraid to go up against the system. But the thing is, prisoners are filing grievances, and those grievances are being ignored. And this is where you go into other. It's called Rights Behind Bars. All Inmate Lives Matter referred a mother one time to Rights Behind Bars. And the founder's name is Wise. I forgot his first name. It might be Paul. But they're supposed to, and this is national, even if they do a virtual visit with you to see if you would be eligible to receive services. But write these things down, Rights Behind Bars. You know, there's a lot of these organizations, legal lawyers in other states, that you can contact for help. You may get it, you may not, but we want to know who's not helping so that we can make sure that everybody knows that their advertising on their websites are false.
Yes,
but you shouldn't have to go.
See, We were contacted by a lawyer firm in New Mexico. I think it's called Prison and Jail Projects, to assist people. And we talked to a paralegal or the person that contacted my mom back, and she said that we had a civil rights action, but then later come back and said that they couldn't do nothing about it and try to refer us to other attorneys.
That's what they do all the time.
And see, and I think, and this wasn't just about the confinement as far as the way that the institution is out here, but the way that I'm being treated from being sent out here from my state while I'm in my appeal process, you know, because, you know, I should have the equal opportunity and be treated equally in the eyes of the law whenever other inmates in Tennessee have better access to Tennessee laws, all these things that I have no access to now. And, you know, and it's complicated to defend yourself when you don't have the access to the law or the necessary tools to defend yourself. But when it came down to it, people don't want to get involved because, like you said, they don't want to go or they're intimidated because their license are being put on the line, you know, to go against the government. And, you know, that's a big fight that a lot of people don't want to, you know, do. And there's only very few people that tend to do that. Is fight against the government. And like I said, and I believe, and I wholly believe, that that's the reason that they put such a stigma on me is to keep people from taking interest in trying to help me because I'm such a dangerous person. But how am I dangerous if I've been in prison since I was 18 years old? You know, if anything, in the institution, the only thing I've had to do is learn to defend myself because this is a dog-eat world. It's not easy. It's never been
And they're contracted. Their contracted medical providers are just as bad because the contracted medical providers, they're causing permanent damage to prisoners. You know, they need to look at independent providers to go into the prison, independent from hospitals and outside, not contracted. WellPath is one of the contracted providers in 36 states. They've got over 1,000 lawsuits against them.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I had seen some on Dr. Phil like a couple of weeks ago. They was having a conversation about slavery in the prison system and about how that it affects not just the prisoners, but the victims that's involved in the prisoners' cases. Like, you know, we only get paid 17 cents an hour. You know, how is the victim in your case going to ever get any type of funds back from that person if they're only getting paid 17 cents an hour? You know, and that's what they were having a discussion on Dr. Phil about, and then the fact that not only does the victims in the prisoners' case don't never get reimbursed or get the money, that also affects the prisoners' kids that they have on the outside where they're not being able to help provide for their kids. You know, and they should be able to, you know, people in prison should have the opportunity to be able to make better money and not be slaved at such a low cost.
Exactly.
You know, so many other people are being suffered by this. Because if you have kids on the streets and you're making 17 cents an hour, you're making $20 a month. How's the victim in your case ever going to see any money from that? And if even prisoners are getting out of prison owing so much restitution that they can't.
Ineffective government.
Yeah, so I watched that on Dr. Phil like a couple of 2 weeks ago, I believe it was, that they were having this type of discussion. And like I said, I completely agree with people. When you kill someone or you rape someone or you do something against someone and you violate the laws, I believe that you should be punished. But your punishment is taken away from your freedom, taken away from your loved ones. It don't mean once you get in prison, you can be treated any kind of way that they want to treat you.
Exactly.
That's just cruel and unusual punishment. You know,
no, that's a mob.
We can't say that the people.
That's a mob. When somebody goes to prison, that's their punishment. As you said, the people inside are supposed to be neutral. They're not supposed to be taking sides, and they're not supposed to be treating people the way they treat people, abusing people, violating them, provoking them, harassing them. They're not supposed to do that. Once you go to prison, and they're not supposed to be doing retribution for the victim, because the victim is getting the punishment you're getting is for what you did to the victim. The monies that you get, people get 96 cents a day. When these corporations are making money, they're using prisoners for cheap labor. The prisoners are getting like 96 cents a day. These corporations are selling sneakers for $100, $200, $300 a sneaker and other things. This is not – modern day slavery is exactly what it should be. But as far as retribution, you have very little to begin with. And our government is looking at the family members who are paying out all the monies because their loved ones can't. And that's sick. That's sad, because once you're in the custody of the Department of Corrections, wherever it may be, the Department of Corrections is responsible for your medical. They're responsible for your physical. They're responsible for your psychological. They're responsible for your haircut. They should be responsible for all these things. The government is making money off of sad situations.
Yes, ma'am. That's another thing that they brought up, because Dr. Field told the lady or the people that he was speaking to that, well, we get free medical. But ain't every state provides you free medical. In Tennessee, you have to pay $5 for emergency sick call. You pay $4 for sick call. So every time you go to medical, they charge you. So it's not free. You know, it's not free. But like I said, you know, I believe in justice. I believe that people that is guilty of something should stand tall. If you committed the crime, stand tall and be a man or be a woman about what you've done and suffer the consequences. And the consequences is that the fact that you're being taken away from your freedom in your families and being put in prison. But once you come to prison, prison is designed to help rehabilitate people, to make them better. That's why we have so many people that get out of prison and come right back to prison, because they never learned anything in prison. If anything, you begin to further hate people of authority. I come in prison at such a young age, and because of my becoming to prison, I had to become a certain way. And at times, I wasn't always proud of who I had to become, but I had to pretty much learn to become, you know, with no heart, because it's like I said, it's a dog eat world in there, and the cops don't care about you. You know, if anything, they're trying to agitate you. That's one thing I hate about being out here, is that these cops walk around like they're in their own gang. They're being disrespectful, but if you put your hands on one of them, they want to give you a street charge. They want to give you more time in prison. But, yeah, they're the ones that agitate you. They're the ones that initiate it. Just like I said, they had us on lockdown for 3 days for nothing that the pod did. Now, how about if we would have started lashing out? Because we're being punished for something that had nothing to do with the pod, and it wasn't even anything serious. It's just these people think that they can abuse their authority, and there's no repercussion behind what they're doing. And so, you know, it's not technical.
A lot of them try to divide, and they also use prisoners as entertainment. That's why they a lot of times they put gang rivals together. They put them out in the yard together. They do a lot of these things to have that entertainment. But what I was going to say is I was talking to some incarcerated individuals quite a while back, and they were doing some work around the grounds or in the grounds or whatever. And I was asking some of them when they came in, they looked real serious. And I said, why do you look so serious? You know, one of the things that I've learned from prisoners themselves was that a lot of them have to put on a front like they're really tough, because they said if you don't act that way, you become a target. You become vulnerable to other prisoners and other staff and the staff. So it's almost like the Department of Corruptions is what everybody's calling it now. The Department of Corruptions is not rehabilitating. What they're doing is they're using these people incarcerated as slaves. They're using them as entertainment. They're using them in every way that they can. Now, I'm going to say this before we end. I just want to say this real quick. In the book of Exodus, in the Bible, Exodus 23:1-3, it says, "Thou shalt not raise a false report. Put not thine hand on the wicked with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil.
You have 1 minute left.
Neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to rest judgment. Neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause." And that's what happens with the prison system today. We have people that are targeting and ganging up on and becoming evil, multitude to do evil. You're getting ready to cut with us, and we're going to be closing down in about 5 minutes. So finish saying what you were saying.
I just want to say before my father, thank you for the opportunity to be on here, and I hope that, you know, someone will take knowledge or take initiative to, because I do need help. You know, I mean, I have my own money to hire a lawyer. I just need to find the right lawyer that's willing to help me. You know, so that's the problem, is finding a lawyer that won't rip me off, that's willing to actually stand up and fight for what's right in this situation, looking for people to assist me or to help, you know, help my fight. And, you know, like I said, I'm willing to pay whatever is necessary.
Thank you for using Securus.
Morgan,
the caller
Morgan.
Has hung up. Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Kimberly,
tell your son, Morgan and Morgan's advertised on television a lot, but Morgan and Morgan, they actually, they work with prisoners, so I don't know how good or bad they are, but it's something to pass on to him. He can at least check it out, or you can check it out, Morgan and Morgan. But I'm glad that he came on, and I want to thank you for bringing him on, Kimberly, and I would like to have him back on again maybe in another month or so just to get a follow-up.
Okay. And I will let him know, Leon, and we do appreciate you covering this story and letting him come on and tell his side or their side of the story, his side of the story. And hopefully when Christina comes home, she'll be able to speak out on her own behalf.
Okay, I'm going to say one thing, you don't have to thank me because I want to tell you, I'm not a very, very religious person, but I do know that God is behind what's going to be happening in this year. And this is why I tell everybody, this is an opportunity for us all to come together all over the place and try to do what we're planning on doing, because I don't believe we're going to be doing it alone. I think the Most High will be with us. And I don't consider the government in the world, the worldly governments, I don't consider them to be righteous. I don't consider them to be fair. There's so much injustices going on in the government itself, so much corruption and division. So we need to, as a people, we need to come together and we need to work on these issues ourselves. But the main people to focus on right now is the media. They need to go inside. Families Against Mandatory Minimums are saying, please talk to your legislative members. Try to get them to stop going into the prisons and giving these people a voice. That's what we need to do. I want to thank you again, Lee. And as I said, anytime you want to come on, bring Christine on or even bring Jason back on again, which I hope you will, we need to get these things out to the public.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Liana.
I was going to say, too, another when in June, a lot of the prisoners are going to be, they can't make calls to the legislative members or the governor, and they can't actually make calls to the media. But a lot of them are going to be writing to the legislative members, and we're going to be getting the information out for them, the contact information for them. So when that time comes, we will be sending it out to anyone that wants to write while they're inside. We will send you the contact information to share with them, so they'll have that and they'll know who to write to. Again, we're going to be doing mass letter writing, calls, and emails to the media, the governors in every state, and also legislative members to try to do something about this mass incarceration, wrongful conviction, first-time offenders, victims who became offenders, and all others out there that we feel at this point in time need to be released or at least considered for release. This has to stop. This really has to stop.
Yes, yes. And we'll do whatever we need to do, Liana, to try to help out in this cause, because it really does need to be addressed. It needs to stop.
We need more family members like yourself joining us, because if these people on Facebook and all these groups can continue to talk about the issues going on with their loved ones, they need to start getting more involved and letting their loved ones know that their loved ones, that their parents, their friends, and their siblings, and their cousins, and everybody else cares enough about them to fight for their freedom.
Yes, yes. That is so true.
We are going to be closing down in another minute, so please, Dorothy, I guess, dropped. But once again, Kimberly, if you want the audience to know anything or just whatever you want to say in these last 60 seconds, please do.
Well, if anyone, you know, knows of a lawyer, if there's any lawyers listening that would be interested in, you know, helping Jason and Christina to expose the injustice in this case, to even review the transcripts, the case, the documents that we have, we would appreciate any help at all that we could get. To help them to, you know, bring attention, awareness, and hopefully get this conviction overturned.
Great. So, Kim, thank you so much again for coming on. And we are going to be ending this episode. I wish you well with Jason, and I hope everything works out for both him and also Christine. And Mariam Jacobs, once again, she's going to be coming to the United States in August. If anybody is interested in having her, a meeting with her, the legislative members is what she's trying to get to. And her book, she's trying to find a way to get her book into the prisons for the prisoners. And she's not going to be charging for them to receive the book. She will be getting it out there, and we will also be needing to find a way for her to help her financially to get these books into the prisons to these prisoners. And also, as they say, she's going to be meeting with legislative members, willing to meet with her. And I'm going to, for one, try to get her to meet with some of the legislators in Massachusetts. So everyone, thank you for listening in. Again, that was Jason Lamar White with his mother, Kimberly White, on the line with on the radio show with us. And they will be returning at a later time to give us an update on the progress of what's been going on. Once again, Kimberly, thank you so much for coming on. We are now going to end this episode. Thank you, audience. Thank you, Kimberly.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.